It's Two Brain Radio. Every week, we'll deliver top-shelf tactics to help you improve your fitness business and move you closer to wealth. And now, here's your host, the most interesting man in fitness, Chris Cooper.
This episode is brought to you by Liquid State Design. Is it worth it to outsource your programming? And when I started TwoBrainBusiness.com, TwoBrainCoaching.com, I built these sites myself from scratch because I wasn't satisfied with what else was out there. It's important to know how to build a website yourself. It's important to know how to change your own oil. It's important to know how to rotate your own tires. But the value of your time is what's most important. I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not a website designer. And so I trust Liquid State Design to take care of all this stuff for me. Check them out. Talk to Teresa. They do some pretty amazing work, and a lot of Two Brain gyms are already using them to huge advantage in their local market. Justin Berg is the general manager of the CrossFit Games. He'll tell you how he got to that esteemed position. He's the man behind the curtain. He really makes the games go. Everything from making sure that the athletes start their heats on time to making sure the events flow well, even though the judges and the coordinators don't always know the events beforehand. He's the guy that puts it all together. In this episode, we're going to talk about what that takes to guide a massive team of 800 volunteers and 100 staff. We're going to learn what it takes to keep everybody playing between the lines, upholding the same standard, the same rules. We're going to learn what it takes to put on a massive event, the toughest sporting event to produce in the world. We're going to learn how the CBS deal came about, how the Madison deal came about. But more importantly, I want you to learn what HQ is like. It's very common now to hear HQ personified as this kind of machine. HQ is a noun unto itself now. And I want to make sure that people understand the human element of HQ, that when you go to HQ, you're dealing with a bunch of humans. Most of these humans are exceptional. They've all been on the L1 staff. They all work with Greg every day, and that rubs off. These are some of the friendliest, happiest people on earth, and they're there to serve you. Justin Berg is a shining example of HQ mentality, staff, and the service help first attitude that you'd find from everyone there. It's really remarkable. If you meet anybody who works at CrossFit HQ, you're going to be struck by how friendly, open, and warm these people are. Without further ado, here's Justin Berg.
So Justin, welcome to Two Brain Radio. It's a real honor to have you here. And everybody watching, listening, I'd like to introduce Justin Berg. He's the GM of the CrossFit Games. Justin, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
It's my pleasure, man. So first, we'd love to hear your story. Talk about how you found CrossFit, your time on the L1 staff, and then how you became the GM of the games.
Sure. I think, you know, I kind of joke it was when CrossFit had low hiring requirements and a lot of work to do. So it was a probably more of a function of time and opportunity than, but it was kind of a serendipitous route for me. I have a background in sports. I graduated from a sport management program where we studied the business of sport and then its applications on the non-performance side, but on the business side. And as part of that, coming out of school, I'd worked the Jacksonville Jaguars. I worked for a small sport marketing agency, and then I worked for a sports technology company. And in that role, I had a lot of opportunities to work with the PGA Tour, the PGA of America, and then a bunch of different kind of random events. So fishing tournaments, the Do Action Sports Tour when it was new and kind of forming, all on a service provider side. But you had a lot of interesting perspective on what they were doing, growing their sports, growing their events, and traveling a lot. And so seeing a lot of different events. I found CrossFit in 2006. And at that point, that was before the inaugural CrossFit Games. I was just like a lot of other people where you felt like you were part of some tribe. And as a former baseball player, I'd played team sports my whole life. Being on the road for 5 or 6 years will remind you that you're not an athlete anymore. And I don't think I liked that identity. And it was neat for me because when I started doing CrossFit, I would go to CrossFit.com and I would watch the video and I would do the workout and I would post my time to comments. And, you know, your weight and everything else, you'd see what other people did. And if there were any other like tall, heavy guys that, you know, had done that workout. And I started seeing that there were gyms that looked like they were made for CrossFit. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. This is how silly I was. The third CrossFit affiliate, CrossFit East in Jacksonville, Florida, was in my hometown. And I didn't know that there was such a thing as an affiliate. I just thought that CrossFit.com was a place where people did their workouts and they logged and they did them in their garage and in Globo gyms. And so I started kind of figuring it out on the fly that, you know, the people that wore the orange shirts, they seemed like they knew the most. And then I didn't realize there were courses that you could go to, you know, learn about CrossFit in a concentrated dose. But I was just totally into it. And at the point in my life that I was doing that, I was traveling a lot, particularly in the PGA Tour. So I would travel, you know, maybe 25 or 30 weeks out of the year, work from PGA Tour media centers. And it just happened that in most cities that I would visit, this was in 2006, you know, there was usually one CrossFit gym. And so I would go to the Memorial Golf Tournament in Dublin, Ohio, and I met Bill Henniger, who had just opened Rogue Fitness. And we went out and had wings after a Saturday workout. And he was like, hey, you know, I think one day I want to make a American-made gym equipment for CrossFit. He was still completing his master's program from, I think it was the University of Michigan at the time. But he was, yeah, you know, one day, you know, maybe I'll sell you some equipment. I said, that's great. Maybe one day I'll be an affiliate and I'll buy some of it from you. And we just kind of left and met Jeff Tucker when I was in Fort Worth for a tournament there. Went down to Miami and met some guys for a golf tournament, you know, would work out of their gym. So it was neat that I had the opportunity to travel and visit a lot of gyms. And it was really impactful for me that I could go to places where I walked in the door and I didn't feel like a stranger. And that was really unique to me because, as you know, I'm a little bit more reclusive in my own personal life, but to be able to, you know, build the confidence to walk into a gym with a bunch of strangers, do something uncomfortable that always gave you butterflies all the way up to, you know, walking to the gym, walking through the door, introducing yourselves to people. And then inevitably it ended up with, hey, you want to go grab Thai food, or you want to go grab some wings, or something down the road. And I found that really unique and different, and it made a big impact on me. You know, flash forward, I worked for that sports technology company through 2008. And at that point, you know, as the world was falling apart, you know, markets were collapsing and, you know, the real estate bubble had kind of burst, I decided to leave high paying technology job to open a CrossFit affiliate. And it was kind of a silly decision. You know, I remember my boss sitting me down and going, hey, you don't have to do this. You know, like, everything's falling apart. You've already made your resignation. But, you know, if you want to stay on, you know, we'd be happy to keep you. Even though we hired three people to replace you, we'd be happy to still have you on because you'd add enough value. And mostly they're a good company. They didn't want to leave me stranded. And I said, nope. And kind of in a naive nod, I said, see you later. I'm out of here. I'm opening a little gym. And, you know, it was a great opportunity. I did it wrong, you know, by all conventional standards. I opened a large gym. I had never coached a class before. But I had a really strong confidence that this is what I was supposed to do. I had a job where I was making a lot of money selling video displays and scoring systems to sports clients, but it wasn't making a big impact in the world. And I couldn't shake the feeling that I wanted to do something that was going to be of high impact and that, you know, was the highest and best use of my time and where could I contribute the most. I'm not a rocket scientist and I'm not a, you know, mathematician, you know, I'm not curing cancer, but, you know, I could build a little community and I could teach people to be more fit and it was going to make an impact in their lives. And so I also thought about it in the sense of maybe I could go back to business school, and I had an opportunity to do in my own kind of small tech startup, which is to take some software and methods that I was using with my other company and apply it to a new industry. And that would have been the bar industry. And I remember thinking, you know, if I lost all my money 2 years from now and everything went upside down, which of these courses would you have preferred to be on? The one where you're spending, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night in bars, or the ones where you're spending, you know, 6 days a week, 5 a.m. inside a gym. And that's kind of been my acid test going forward is, you know, go where the good people are. And the people that I want to be associated with are the ones waking up, you know, doing hard things, challenging themselves to be better, which might not be the same behavior you find in bars, you know, past midnight. That was the decision, you know, kind of the swing factor. And I said, if I lose all my money, at least I'll be really fit. And the next business that I start will be my second business. And that's not a bad place. So I did that, and at that same time that I switched over, I had just attended the CrossFit Level 1 course, which is a prerequisite to opening an affiliate. And at that point, it was interesting because 3 months into owning a gym, I went to the CrossFit affiliate gathering, which was in February of 2009, mm-hmm. and it was in Austin, Texas. You were probably there. And it was a unique opportunity for me because I didn't know why I went. I was just kind of like, hey, I'm a new affiliate owner. And like, what are you supposed to do? And it's like, they're doing an affiliate gathering. It's like, I guess you got to go. And so I went and bummed a couch off some friends that I knew through friends and didn't know anybody. So I literally didn't know a single other person. But I went and I attended, and this awkward feeling like I need to talk to, you know, somebody there. And I saw Greg and I felt like, you know, this is really, it was like a bad high school dance or something like that. I was like, kind of made eye contact and he saw me. I was like, I think he just looked at me like I should say something. And I ended up walking over and talking to him and just said, you know, Greg, I have this background. I've worked in professional sports. I've studied professional sports and I have some experience there. And that if you ever thought you needed it, it would be a big honor for me to be able to contribute that. And so, you know, I don't have anything to sell you. I quit my job. For 3 months, I've been a CrossFit affiliate owner, and that's it. And so I'm here. I just wanted to say, if there's ever an opportunity for me to, you know, contribute, I'd love to do that. And he grabbed me by the hand and walked me over, introduced me to a couple other people who at that point were working in, on the kind of IT side of the games, and said, hey, you guys should talk because this guy's got a background and, you know, he knows some things about handheld scoring and, you know, technology and stuff. You guys should get together. And that's one of Greg's great skills, is putting people together and having a very open mind about where things can go. And so he introduced me to some people. And then that same affiliate gathering, I met Nicole Carroll. And in my previous job, I traveled a lot. And in only those 3 short months when I was in Jacksonville and I wasn't traveling, I felt like the walls were just caving in on me. So I was used to traveling, you know, 150 to 200 days a year, basically living out of a suitcase. And I loved it, you know, single guy, and, you know, got to see a lot of different places, different sporting events, you know, really liked the company I worked for, but burned a lot of people out. And most people have a certain shelf life when you're on the road like that. Like, you either turn into a roadie and, you know, you're a lifer, or you love it like crazy and then it fizzles and then it becomes toxic. Not a lot of people fall in between. It's not the kind of thing where people kind of do, you know, people either, you know, pick one of those two paths. And so I just kind of casually started a conversation with Nicole and say, hey, do you burn a lot of people out on seminar staff? Because, you know, I used to travel a lot. And she goes, no, we don't. We don't burn people out. And I found that really unusual. And I said, well, you know, like, what do you do? And now looking back and having been on CrossFit seminar staff, it's totally obvious that when you're with people and you're doing good, meaningful work around the world, it doesn't feel like the same burnout as if you're getting paid to go to a golf tournament every weekend, or you're getting paid to go to a concert. And so she was totally right. And I remember that sinking into the back of my head. And I was like, well, golly, if they don't burn people out as much as they're traveling, because I saw the same people in the videos and they were all over the place. I said, this is something I'd really like to be a part of. And so I asked her if there were any opportunities. And she said, yeah, you know, there's an internship opportunity. I had previously taken the level 2 and I had passed, you know, just by the skin of my teeth, by a very small margin. Only, I think, 3 or 4 other people passed during that level 2. So I did have the level 2 in my bag. And she said, yeah, so if you want to, you know, give it a shot, let me know, send me an email. And I, like, you know, went to my table, pulled out my phone, and, like, emailed her right there. I was like, hey, I was that guy that just talked to you. I was like, would love to be. I'm super interested. And the answer is yes, anytime I could get it. And that materialized into being offered an internship chance on CrossFit seminar staff that I took. And at that point, there were not a lot of seminars. So, you know, it was like you got one shot, an internship. And then I think it was maybe 2 or 3 months after that. You didn't know how you did. And so, you know, I got invited back. And that by itself is a whole interesting and kind of fun kind of circus ride for me, because I was not a good coach. But remember being in my level 1 in West Palm Beach, Florida, when I attended as a participant and watching the skill that the lecturers had and their passion for the material and how capable they were to making what is relatively complicated material seem intuitive and meaningful and actionable. And I remember listening to those lectures and saying, one day, I'd love to be able to speak with that type of authority. I would like to know it to the depth that they know it and be able to communicate it as well as they did. And I had no idea that there was a role for that, that, you know, could be an occupation for people, or I had no idea what Flow Master was. They didn't call it that at that point. Dave Castro was, I guess, the Flow Master of that course. And anybody just didn't know. I was like, you know, I just was so impressed with the skill that they had and the passion for the material. And so when I joined seminar staff, I remember that being a goal that I was like, hey, I didn't want to be a floor master for a title. I just thought that those were the people that had the best command of the material. And to be a great trainer at an affiliate, I wanted to have the best command of that material that I could possibly have, both on the floor and in lecture format, theoretically, and then practically. Working to serve for 5 years on CrossFit seminar staff and eventually make it into that position as a flow master.
That was great. So you're a flow master at this stage, and somebody comes back around and says, oh yeah, this guy knows a little bit about events and scoring.
Yeah, it was actually, so there was actually a pretty big overlap period. Okay. And I think, like a lot of your audience who are entrepreneurs, you got a lot of irons in the fire. And so for that first year, I'll go all the way back to 2009. So, you know, the world's falling apart and I'm opening a gym. I have 0 clients and I open the door. 3 months into that, I get to the gathering. And so I'm making a little bit of income on seminar staff, and that's enough to kind of bridge the gap for me. And I'm getting the gym together. As I finish my internship, there's a period where the very first CrossFit, maybe it was the second, it was the CrossFit Trainer Summit. Okay. Was popping up, and Dave Castro happened to be in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I remember, you know, it's another one of those awkward feelings where it's like, you know, Chuck Carswell and Drew Thompson were there. Drew Thompson was the flow master, and they were yupping it up with Dave. And I'd only seen kind of Dave in the videos and stuff. And this is 2009, the third year of the CrossFit game. So I clearly knew who Dave was. He and I had been exchanging emails where I had said, hey, through the Greg connection in Austin, I had been emailing some people who eventually got forwarded to Dave, and I didn't get a response back. But I think Tony had been emailing with me a little bit. And then on the separate track, I was interning on seminar staff, and I had my third internship, which would be my final as an intern, and then I'd be joining seminar staff after that. Dave attended. And so I said, hey, I'm Justin, I'm that guy. And it was this kind of awkward, like, I think he knew there had been emails on both sides, but seeing it in one person, same place. And he was talking to the other guys about coming to the trainer summit. And then, you know, just kind of awkwardly, like, sticking my head in the conversation, he's like, where are you coming? And I was like, does that mean I'm invited? And so I kind of said, you know, yes, as an assumptive. And then Drew Thompson, I'll never forget, said, you know, hey, you can room with me. And so at that point, it was, you know, you kind of had to, not everybody that was junior on staff got to go. And so I did get an opportunity to go. I think everybody that was on staff got to go, but I was an intern and was kind of in flex. And he said, hey, even if you don't have a room, you can stay with me. And that kind of sense of, like, you know, he took me under his wing and made an opportunity for me. It really, really meant a lot. And it stuck with me for a long time. But anyway, so that's how I met Dave. And then, you know, I met Tony through that also at the trainer summit and said, hey, at that point at the CrossFit Games, it was 2009. And I ended up going to the games that year and helping just as a judge. I didn't really have any significant role except soaking it in and trying to contribute wherever you could. But I remember Tony talking about, hey, the games are going to be huge this year because we're going to have video display. It's going to be a Jumbotron.
Right.
And I used to sell that technology at the Players Championship. They had 18 different video displays all over their golf course, and some of them were gigantic. And I remember thinking in my mind, I was like, man, if you think the Jumbotron's big, I was like, you're standing on the top of a rocket, and it's still on the land, on the pad. You're getting ready to be shot in outer space. And so I really believed that. I believed in the importance of the CrossFit Games as an event, as a ritual, and as something that was just aspirational. And not just that, but, you know, it's the definitive test of fitness. I thought it was just the coolest thing in the world. And I watched it grow from a little blog to some videos to some highlights to a qualifying series of regional events. And it's like, hey, anything I could do to be involved with that, I'm in. And that's why I quit my job, because I felt like it was really important for me to burn the boats behind me and be fully involved. And so that's kind of where it started in 2009. And at that point, I started on just doing a little contract work. And it was real simple. There was a ton of work. And one of my first things that we did was, you know, there was no really formalized drug testing policy. And I said, hey, that's something I can do. And, you know, later on, it became formulating a rule book. And I said, hey, I can kind of help with that. And then, you know, connect with some people that had been working at different events to standardize some things. And then, you know, just kind of started doing all the odds and ends. And remember very early on, had a conversation with Dave and Tony. And Dave said, hey, I'm going to run the competition. Tony, you're going to run the media. And Justin, just do everything else. So I became the everything else guy. And really quickly, it was important because in 2010, we moved from Aromas, California on Dave's private ranch to the StubHub Center in Carson, California. And that was a major change. And it was a change out of necessity because we had been booted off the ranch. They said, you can't come back because there was some problems unless you pay all these fees and do all these environmental impact studies and stuff. And basically, they were saying, hey, you're out of here unless you kind of pay through the nose. And so that doesn't go over real well in CrossFit. And so we were out. And they said, hey, have you ever been to this venue? And I said, yes, I have been there. I've done some events there. I was wrong. I got the name of the venue mixed up. But, but I had done a lot of golf and tennis tournaments. And tennis I was very familiar with. And so we moved in there. I was real comfortable with, you know, operating an event and being at an event where the, you know, the infrastructure and the bowels of the event really would make it work. I had worked with some very good people coming up through the regional ranks where I knew a lot of really good event operators. And so we put some people in position and, you know, they just took over. You know, we moved in and had a really fun run there.
Absolutely, man. So why don't we start there? I mean, it was the first year of the CrossFit Games, it was the Home Depot Center, right? And then they sold. Yeah. So how did the Home Depot Center get chosen in the first place?
So the first, you know, for the record, I think it was a suggestion from a guy named Sean Lake who had said, hey, you know, we know of this venue. It's in Southern California. They might have some availability. And they hosted a tennis tournament. They used to host a big tennis tournament. They've since stopped that. I think like 8 or 9 years ago, they stopped hosting it. And he said, yeah, this is, you know, he's familiar with the area. You might want to check him out. And so that was it. And I think maybe Dave had taken a trip and seen it and conceptually said, hey, I think this will work. And they had a soccer stadium and they had a tennis stadium. And the beautiful thing about Carson is that there's no real weather risk, much like Northern California. It could be hot, but it's not going to rain. And that's a real advantage when you're running an event, is having reliability and knowing that you're going to run on time and on schedule. And so that's how they found it. I think we just kind of fell into their lap. They didn't know what to expect. And, you know, at the beginning, the first couple of years, I mean, our attendance was really low. You know, there's a couple thousand people, that was it. And now to look back on the things that we were doing, you know, we were driving forklifts through, you know, spectator traffic areas. Very first year we had the sandbag event where we moved sandbags from the south end of the stadium to the north end of the stadium, from north to south actually. And then we had to cart them back in between heats. And so, you know, we broke a lot of people too. We bit off a lot. It was a really challenging environment, but it also kind of laid the roots for the games on the event side being a test of fitness as well, you know, preparing for the unknown. The workouts are not known by most of the staff until just minutes or hours before they take place, much less the athletes. And so it was a real challenge. And, you know, I joke all the time that if you can cover the CrossFit Games or produce the CrossFit Games, you can do any event in the world. It's really the super sport. You know, this year at the CrossFit Games, there's 13 different scored events. You know, nobody tries to do what we do. There's no systems to do what we do because everybody knows their event, you know, years, sometimes multiple years in advance. The Olympics is playing for several Olympiads in advance. For us, you know, we're, you know, the workouts are very sometimes last minute. And so we have to have a controlled way of, you know, keeping them secret, distributing them in a smart way, and then also giving certain people on the team enough information to be effective. But the people on the receiving end have to be accountable for the success of the event without having 100% knowledge of what they're doing. And I think that builds a huge sense of trust. It is dependent on great communication. And ultimately, it all lies on us having a common foundation of CrossFit, that you accept that it's going to be hard, you accept that it's going to be challenging, but you meet it with full force and full intensity and conviction that, you know, we're going to get it right. You know, as long as we run on time and have a good picture, you know, we usually pull it off. And we have, you know, for the 9 years that I've been involved so far.
Well, I'm going to come back to that because the way the team is managed that runs the games, it's remarkable. And so I'm glad you mentioned that there's that common thread and understanding in there. So what prompted the move to Madison? Where were the first kind of conversations taking place?
You know, it really started, we're really hard on ourselves, Chris. And this is Dave and I and a lot of, you know, we really try to do a good job. And what we're trying to do isn't necessarily what everybody wants us to do. But I think it starts with Dave and it starts with a belief in fitness and that this has to be a test. And that ultimately, at the end of the day, you have to be able to point to a man and a woman and say they are the fittest. And that the series of tests that they've proven themselves through legitimize the claim that they're the fittest man and the fittest woman on earth right now. And if you look at where we were for the first 3 years on a ranch in Aromas, California, you know, the first year there was 3 workouts, next year there was a couple more, and there was no qualifying. So it was really the fittest people in like Northern California and a couple Canadians that came down, and, you know, a couple people like Miko came and some others. But it was really, it started becoming international, but it was really just exploring, you know, the formats and, you know, what could we do, what could we not do, what was too much for athletes at that given time. And then starting to settle into a cadence and a trajectory of, you know, every year the test evolves as the athletes do, and it exceeds their capabilities. And so you start expanding the margins of the world's fittest athletes, which in turn produces, you know, more fit athletes for the subsequent year. For the first 3 years, the competition was growing and the caliber of the athletes was growing and the event itself was growing at a really high rate. And so, you know, the Woodstock of fitness, you know, if anybody listening to this was in Aromas, you know, for 2007, 8 or 9, it's nothing but fond memory. It was hot. It was dusty. Beers were $2. You know, they had guys out there that were, you know, slinging bacon and eggs for a couple bucks too. At one point, E.C. Sinkowski was, you know, serving beer in the beer garden, and then we were short on judges. So, like, you know, they just tossed her a blue judge's uniform and said, hey, go judge. I forgot who it was, but I remember standing right next to her judging and being like, who's she? She's new. It's like, well, you know, 9 minutes ago, she was upstairs, you know, selling beers and taking tips. But it had this really cool integrated feel where you're all part of it. And I remember after Saturday night, sticking around, and some of the athletes that got cut were all hanging out with the athletes that had made it, and they're all kind of in it together, and the spectators were there, and there wasn't these boundaries between like athlete and, I mean, there were, but you were just in it. It was like everybody was there, like, what's the test? Great. Spectators got excited, athletes got excited, you know, who gets to advance, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, an athlete turns into a spectator, or an athlete, geez, I mean, probably could have turned into a judge, you know, if you were short there. So it was a really interesting dynamic. As you move to Carson, the competition grew very, very fast. So the curve was very steep and the quality of the media product shot way up. In 2010, we had our first hour on ESPN and then we continued. You know, we had a relationship for several years with ESPN that's now turned into a really great relationship with CBS. But we produced, you know, live television, we produced taped episodes, and the event itself just started looking better. The athletes were better. The media coverage was better. The storytelling was better. The qualifying was better. But so the sport side really grew. the community experience, I don't think, grew at the same rate. And so, you know, while Carson was great for a while, because you're like, hey, it's awesome, it's a professional venue, after a while, you're like, well, you leave the venue and, you know, you're in, you know, Compton. And so the experience when you left those gates, when you're on site, it was great. You know, it's cool. And it felt like you were really upgraded, but it didn't feel bespoke for a CrossFitter. It didn't feel like they were tailored to you. It just felt like CrossFit finally got a little bit of the limelight. When we, and this started for several years, and we've been planning a move for a long time, we really wanted to go somewhere where we can continue to grow the festival atmosphere at the CrossFit Games. Some of the Woodstock of fitness that would have been missing since we were in Aromas that you just couldn't do when you're middle up in Los Angeles. They're going to get the Olympics, and it's going to be a drop in the bucket for whatever else is going in LA at that time. We set about looking for a lot of different cities as options. We started with a list of 100 cities that expressed interest. We narrowed it down pretty quick to about 25. Of that, we broke them into camps of, like, you know, large cities, medium-sized cities, and small cities. And right after the 2016 games, which is our 10th anniversary, earlier than Dave or I wanted to, we forced ourselves to get on a plane, and we started visiting a large, a small, and a medium-sized city. And after we did the large and the small cities, we decided we don't think we're doing this right. It was frustrating. The big city didn't really work out. The small city was a waste of time. And we almost pulled the plug. And the guy that we were with, Billy Rogers, is on our team. He goes, hey, you know, we committed to Madison. They came all the way out to the games. We owe it to them to go and, like, to just finish it out. And against Dave and I's will, we stuck to the plan. We went from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we went to Madison. And we got there late at night. We drove around and we said, whatever, looks fine. Woke up in the morning. They gave us a little boat tour. And I think it was the first time that Dave and I both looked around and were like, well, it doesn't. Like, it's not an automatic no. But in our minds, it was like, you know, it's going to be a no. There's no way we're going to say yes to Madison. And then they toured us through a couple other facilities. And it was, you know, we didn't like some of the facilities that we saw, none of which we used at the games this year. But they showed us one place. They showed us another place. We're like, not interested, not interested. And then they showed us the Alliant Energy Center campus. And we came there and we were walking through some of the pavilions. And I remember leaning over to Dave and I'm like, you know, there's something here. And we, you know, kind of talked about a couple of things. You could just kind of see the light bulb go off. And really, Dave's critical to the whole process. He's central to it because Dave's the one that writes the workouts. And so he has to be able to look at the palette and say, this is a picture that I want to make. And it's kind of my job, the way I see it, is to create the canvas and the frames and then create prints afterwards. You know, like regionals, you got to do the same workouts over and over again. But at the games, it's really important that he sees and has a vision that he's excited about. And you could see it kind of click, turn over. And the last part was we went into the Coliseum, which is our main arena for CrossFit Games. And we walked in and I remember crossing my fingers and going, I really hope this doesn't suck. Because if that venue didn't work, it was like, you're right, it's all for naught. And we walked in and we both looked at each other and said, I think we can do this. But anyway, that's how we ended up in Madison. And then from there, it was really great. It was exciting to watch Dave really embrace the challenge of programming in a brand new environment. And that environment wasn't just a soccer stadium and a tennis stadium and a beach, but it became, you've got two impressive lakes, you've got trails, you've got a platinum rated bike city. So you've got a network of trails all over the place, Trek bicycles, headquarters in Waterloo is only, you know, a half hour drive away. It was a lot of fun. You know, you could leave all the old barricades behind and all the old set limitations that we had with that facility and really create something from scratch. And so I think that's part of what made the games this year so much fun for people who chose to attend in our first year in Madison. And what makes it exciting for people who are coming back is that the event was cool, but then also the festival atmosphere was way different in terms of attendance and what was available to them and the experience of being outside, some days being cold, some days having a little rain. I think it just made it even more memorable and they got something that they had not been part of the games experience, the finals experience before we were able to deliver. And I think, you know, hopefully set the foundation to build upon going forward.
Yeah, I'll say from somebody who visited, I would never have taken my family to Carson because as you said, you know, the second you walked off the curb at StubHub Center, you're in Compton. There's nowhere to go. There's no restaurant. Madison, you know, less than a mile away, you've got this amazing street full of great restaurants and CrossFit took over the whole city. Uber drivers were commenting on how fun everybody was. And yeah, it was a great experience inside and outside the gates. So looking at it now, what do you have planned for next year as far as like setup, any changes there?
Well, I think first it all centers back on competition. So we have a very important set of goals. First is that the CrossFit Games crown the fittest man and woman on earth. And that means we have to run a tight competition and the athlete experience is central and most important. The second is to create a great community event. And the third's, you know, use this as an opportunity to tell a CrossFit story through media. And so we have some very correctable things that we can do behind the scenes in terms of, you know, how we organize the venue, infrastructure, event flow, you know, everything that we built there. I mean, we built a giant temporary arena that was out in the middle of a parking lot. And so, you know, how do we want to make that better in future years? You know, if we've committed to building something, how do we even make it better in the future? There's some new features on campus that, without getting into too much detail, will be involved in competition going forward. And we've talked a lot about the spectator experience. And that's really been some of the exciting parts, where after, you know, our team is really good at making things better. After 7 years in Carson, you could see how it was rough the first year, but we pulled it off. The second year was a little better and we pulled it off. And after about 4 years, we got tired of saying we pulled it off and started becoming ambitious with pageantry, the coordination, the way that we ran the event, and the behind the scenes kind of morale and kind of spirit of doing things fast and right and adapting to change very quickly. And so all those things will happen. And so I'm very comfortable that our team, who's led by an exceptionally strong leadership core, will make all the correctable things better. The athlete warm-up areas, the way that we get people to and from campus, you know, all the layout things. But what I think is going to be a lot of fun is continuing to build the non-competition kind of citywide festival feel around the games. And I think we've picked a good partner in Madison. I think that the local restaurants are going to show up big, you know, adding music and more music to the CrossFit Games. This year we had a free concert on Saturday night, and about, you know, 2,000 people stuck around for it. It was Yellow Wolf, who was a cool artist, and it was an interesting blend with our community, but a ton of people stuck around. I think looking at more music opportunities for ticket holders next year, and then also building the food experience up, you know, hopefully incorporating more lectures, more opportunities for people to kind of add training into their week as well. So both training as a, hey, I just want to get my workouts in, or I want to, you know, build community, right? It's like you show up at the event and, you know, everybody's ready for a workout to break out. You know, it's the most emergency prepared group you could possibly have. But building that up, and then also, you know, if people want to, you know, attend a lecture or, you know, hear Greg speak, there was a great addition this year, was being able to add the symposium that we had early in the week, where Greg dressed the crowd, and it was a health symposium. So it wasn't just about fitness. It was about, you know, the larger initiatives that CrossFit as a company stand behind. And then also there are level one courses. There were master's courses around town the week before. So the RV and camping experience is something that I really expect to shoot through the roof. I think that could be the meteoric rise in the future. We have a 55-acre park directly adjacent to the CrossFit Games main campus there in Madison, which means, you know, tent camping is available. There's 100 different RV slots there. Only about half were filled this year, and I fully expect every one of those to be gone as soon as we open it up, you know, next year, because I think that's the experience. You know, I'm going to take the RV, I'm going to load up the kids, and I want to sit out and I want to tailgate. And when I leave, I don't really leave. You know, the competition's done, and then I go back and I'm going to spend the rest of the night just hanging out with buddies out and, you know, meeting new friends from all over the world who chose to attend the games. I think that's really the fun part, is teaching our community how to tailgate. I think a lot of us kind of forgot. A lot of us never knew, I guess. But, you know, I'm from Florida, you know, so on Saturdays this time of year, it's all about college football and tailgating and, you know, hanging out with people and a little smack talk, but a lot of, you know, something that you have in common. And I think letting that unfold and grow organically, not kind of nudging it forward, but just creating fertile ground for, you know, the camping and the RV experience. We got a lot of friends that work at the CrossFit Games, professionally do some of the top festivals in the entire United States, some of them in the world. And their strongest suggestion is just let it grow. Don't make it grow. You don't need to be a catalyst for everything. Sometimes you just got to let that vine grow. And I think that with music and camping and the surrounding things around town, I think it's be patient and, you know, continue to plow, continue to fertilize, and kind of let the community come in and really make it an event that they want. And so we're all ears. I think the city has been very receptive, and I think there's a lot of room for us to grow there. And that's ultimately where I think growing in the future. Vision for the games is that this is going to be a major cultural event for the entire world. There's something about the Kentucky Derby that people tune in and they go, hey, what's with the hats and the mint juleps and the, what the hell's a trifecta? You know, but people want to watch the Derby. They watch it, they attend, and they go crazy for it. I think there's something to be said for, like, what's all the tank tops and the tequila sodas and the what's a snatch again, you know, and like, well, this is what it is. Our goal, we talked about with storytelling, is I want cab drivers next year to say, can you believe how many different tests they did at the CrossFit Games? So instead of, you know, we were joking, you know, the most common feedback that I get is, from an Uber driver. That's like the acid test. It's like, what is the Uber driver who knows a little something about CrossFit tell me? Like, can you believe that, you know, Iceland Annie is abs? You know, that used to be like, I'd heard that two times. So that made it the most frequent thing that I'd heard. And then I heard a lot about, hey, the Icelandic women, or, you know, can you believe that there's all kinds of them? There's one that was really good. She won two times in a row. There's another one that won a couple times. But our goal is that, you know, the people around town are going, can you believe how many different tests there were, how varied the test was? Can you believe how capable these athletes are? Can you believe all that, you know, that they're fast and they're strong? And but to use it so that it's not just an entertainment event, but it's something that really sticks with people, that it educates, it inspires. And it changes some behavior when they get home. You know, it makes them, you know, motivated to, you know, hit that 6 a.m. workout, you know, pick up the nutrition challenge, you know, continue to hang out and build a relationship with people who they're friends with at the gym. And I think that's the beauty of events. Events are really great because they give you a license to experience something that's different than your ordinary life. You know, we all go to a gym, you know, we do classes and we eat right. And it can become a little mundane and a little routine. And then you go to the CrossFit Games and you remember, like a little kid, you're like, this is awesome. This is so cool that other people do this. And they came from all over the world to experience an event together. And when it's cold and it's windy and it's hot or it's whatever it is, or you're frustrated and then it gets paid off and there's this tension, what's the workout going to be? I can't believe it. And you ooh and ah together. It just makes it kind of supercharged. You know, the same way you can listen to, you know, your favorite band on Pandora or, you know, on a CD or in the car or something like that over and over and over. And then you go to a concert and you're like, that's why I love these guys. Like, that's so cool. And it just adds to really your identity with the whole thing. And I think that the impact that we're having is really good around the world. And I think that the ritual and the experience of going to events together and experiencing things together in person only amplifies that. And, you know, it makes it even stronger for the people that leave and go home after.
That's great stuff, man. So I really want to kind of dig into leadership, because how many volunteers did you have this year, Justin? I heard 300 and then I heard 800.
The 800 number is closer. Yeah, we had a little over 800 total volunteers helping out, and that was just at the CrossFit Games. You know, we've got a couple hundred at each regional, you know, that happens beforehand, but about 800 in Madison.
So can we talk about, you know, how do you inspire these guys? How do you keep them operating from the same playbook? Because when they're out on the floor, it doesn't just look like coordination. It looks like synchronization, you know, like they're a part of a big dance or something. So where do you start building that team?
We cheat. That's the short answer. Is the first thing we do is we start from probably the best pool of human beings that you could possibly choose from. And that's CrossFitters who have years of experience contributing at a local level, whether that's the regionals or formerly sectionals, people who are affiliate owners, people who are trainers, and the people that really believe in what we're trying to do. And so when I say that, I mean, it's like, I couldn't go out and hire, if you gave me any amount of money, I couldn't go out and hire people that would do a better job than the people that we have on our staff right now. There's nothing, because they would have to start from the same place. They believe in what we're doing. They understand that it's constantly varied. It's going to be intense, which means it's going to be uncomfortable, but that's necessary in order to achieve the results that we want to achieve. They're all bought into that. And the things they have in common are fitness, they're durable, they're performance oriented, they're seeking clear leadership, you know, so they walk into it and they go, I know. And by the way, these guys are like alpha of the alphas. You know, it is unbelievable. You know, we have guys that are, you know, high ranking in the military. We have emergency room doctors that are, you know, volunteers. You know, hey, I just want to come to the event and roll out barbells. You know, I just want to be led. And I think right now it's rare that you can go somewhere. I think a lot of people are frustrated in their, you know, traditional careers and you go, hey, you don't really feel bought into whatever you're doing, but it pays the bills. But you'd love to go somewhere where you said, I really respect the guy or gal that's telling me what to do. I have a clear objective. And if I do it well, it's going to matter. And to have meaningful work and really strong leadership, and at the end of the day, do hard things with people you like, I think it's a real unique opportunity to volunteer at the CrossFit Games. And I think that's why, you know, it's a little bit like a CrossFit vacation. It's going to be hard, but it's going to matter. And I think that's what we can give people. And we can give them a lot of respect. You know, we feed them well, try to feed them well. And to be honest, we didn't feed them great this year. We're going to feed them even better going forward. But that's one of the things is, you know, you say thank you, you give them meaningful work. You don't sugarcoat it, but you give them something that has purpose. And so when it comes to leadership, I think for us, it starts with like encoding and making sure that the people you're talking to have the same values as the people who are leading those people. Because if you have to force your values down onto people who you're leading, it makes it really hard. And if you're guessing, you're going to miss more often than not. We don't have to guess. The people that are there because they really believe in what we're doing. And the level of expectation now after 11 years is there. They know what they're getting into. Very few people are surprised that it's a long day or a hard day or that they're yelling sometimes because they know that we're trying to get it right. We're not yelling because we're jerks. We're yelling because there's an urgency. We need people to feel that urgency because it's got to move quickly. And there's never a time that we're going to be hard on somebody that we won't come back and say, hey, that was necessary. Thanks, you did a good job when you did a good job. The other thing is we've got a really, really experienced team now. You know, there was a period of time where we ran 33 sectionals, 16 regionals, and the CrossFit Games. And so as we have kind of pruned down and concentrated our competition funnels, where now we run 8 regionals, you know, it was a really hard thing for us to move from a staff of 17 regional directors down to a staff of 8. Fortunately, we lost very few people. And so what it allowed is that the best leaders and the people that had the most time moved up. And then a lot of those other people moved into support roles. And I think that was one of the best things that ever happened to us. You know, we pruned back, we did less, but the things that we did were better and of a higher caliber, and leadership became a real priority. And we cheat by, you know, taking people that have great experience. John McLaughlin is kind of our staff sergeant, and he's been involved since the early days. He was at my first level one back in 2008. A gifted instructor, you know, he's high ranking in the fire department in South Florida. So he has a great kind of command and control background. And then he's just as, it just drips off of him. The guy's so fun to be around. He walks around with a giant smile, just, you know, doesn't matter what the situation is. And we've got, you know, dozens of those guys. You know, I could go down, you know, the Chris Smiths of the world, the Mike Martinez's of the world, the Curtis Bowlers of the world. We're fortunate also that we draw a large number of our staff from either very senior affiliate owners or people who have a lot of experience on CrossFit's seminar staff. And for anybody that's familiar with the seminar staff, you understand that that is a high performing group of people. We're highly critical of each other internally so that you can raise that performance to a high level. And so when you set the bar with those guys who are really kind of carrying the torch and they're leading the leaders, you know, we're in a really strong position for success. So, you know, when we talk about leadership, we don't talk about leadership a lot because kind of all we have is leaders. And so for us, really what it becomes is, you know, make sure you start with the right people, that your values are encoded, you know, across the whole core. That's, you know, the 800 volunteers, as well as the, you know, 25 or 30 committee chairs. Communicate clearly. Don't sugarcoat it, because I think people just want straight talk. And if it's, we got to move fast and we got to be loud in order to be heard, then get it done right now. And then afterwards, say thank you and have a beer. And I think as long as you're all pulling on the same rope and you care about what the results are, you know, all the mistakes we make are mistakes of being too ambitious or trying to be too precise, you know, and they're not big mistakes. Most people never see them, but, you know, sometimes we try to do too good of a job. None of the mistakes we make are because there's apathy or people don't care about their performance. So we're really lucky in that regard. And ultimately, I think that's what makes the CrossFit game super special is, you know, it's meaningful work and you get to play for a winning team. And not everybody gets that in their life. And I think that even if you get to experience it for 1 week out of the year, knowing that you had meaningful work that was going to change people's lives and it's going to impact them after you were done, and knowing that you played for a winning team, it goes a long way. Because a lot of people have meaningful work, but, you know, you got to slug it out working for a nonprofit or never really materializes. It can't become a career. It's a hobby or it's a passion. And a lot of people are very successful, but it doesn't matter. And, you know, in some regards, that was my story. You know, I made decent money and, you know, had a good title and, you know, was successful, you know, by a lot of means. But, you know, selling scoreboards at golf tournaments doesn't matter. For me, it wasn't meaningful work. And so that's what we get to offer people when they volunteer at the games or when they join the CrossFit Games team, or is meaningful work and you get to play for a winning team. And I think a lot of people find that highly addictive and we love it.
That's great, man. As a proportion or a percentage, like how many people come back every year to volunteer?
We have a really, really high retention rate. I don't know that offhand, but I'll say when we open it up, we can only take about 800 people. There's certain challenges to running any kind of large-scale operation, and you can't take every person. But we turn around. I think we get over 2,000 applications annually to be a volunteer at the CrossFit Games. So we have to be, unfortunately, really selective. Not unfortunately. It's a real privilege that we get to have such a talented group of people and returning group of people. But we really look for experience. It's experience and people that have been around and they've, you know, added to the team and contributed in meaningful ways. Yeah, so it's a tough spot to fill, you know, for all the reasons that we talked about.
Sorry, it's not a tough spot to fill. It's a tough spot to get.
So if you got one, oh, yeah. You know, I hope you will come back next year. But we fortunately never had a challenge with filling those spots. We've had a lot of people that graciously give their time.
That's awesome, man. In that kind of culture, I mean, everybody is an alpha, right? Everybody's a leader. So I'm sure at some point there's been a conflict. There's been some friction. How do you resolve that within a team of alphas?
We do. There are a lot of alphas. I think the important thing for us is that you don't necessarily have to resolve all that conflict. You know, a lot of conflict is, it's necessary. It's necessary for Dave and I to disagree on certain things because Dave has a very clear vision of what he wants. And a lot of people, you can't have a room full of people just nod their head and say, yeah, that's the only way to do it. And so I think conflict is a necessary part of the equation. If you don't have conflict, you're going to run off a cliff or you're not going to get anything done. And so conflict from a leadership standpoint down, I think, you know, motivates people to speed up and get on track. And then also there's going to be some necessary conflict back upstream and say, hey, I think that, you know, based on what we see on the ground, this is not going to work. And so we want you to be successful. We all want to be successful. And what we see is not what you see. So I need to tell you about that. And that might not be comfortable. So I think, again, it comes back to tolerating conflict as a necessary part of the equation. If we, you know, didn't have thick skin, this wouldn't be possible. And I also think that it's, you know, it's a pretty fair part of the equation that you go, hey, you got to be able to, if you dish it, you got to be able to take it. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, none of it's personal. Everybody wants to do the best job. And sometimes they have a strong opinion about what to do in order to accomplish that. And so, you know, as long as everybody fights fair and there's no personal attacks, I think it's, you know, it's fair play. And so we deal with that a lot. And you have to, because there's so many, I mean, the CrossFit Games is the definition of intensity. It's a lot of work in a really short period of time. And in order to get that done, there are going to be friction points. And whether that's on the rogue team and they're like literally friction points, you're like, there's too much metal on the floor and it all has to go through this tiny tunnel. And like, there's going to be problems there. Or if it's, you know, how do we handle a scoring dispute? Or, you know, how do we, you know, deconflict, you know, how many camera guys are on the floor? Ultimately, again, we cheat because we hire people that care and that they really see the mission before their own specific task. And if you can reproduce that, conflict falls off people's backs much quicker. And the conflict that lingers is usually a personal problem. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but I think that you can resolve it a lot quicker. And I think that's the beauty of CrossFit, is that CrossFit is a very, like, it cuts to the core. You know, is it reality or is it not? And if it's reality, can you measure it? And, you know, so one of the things is going to win out. And I can tell you, I've been involved with a lot of things where if two people really disagree, they're both reasonable about saying, hey, if there's a better way and you can show me what the better way is, yep, you're right, I'm wrong, let's go on with the next one. And it's, you know, by the way, as soon as resolutions hit, it's great, we got another challenge coming right behind it. So let's get on to the next thing and don't take that baggage along with you. Yeah, I think conflict is necessary. And I think that if there wasn't conflict, we would not be performing at our optimal level.
Actually, you know, now that you say that, I can give a personal example of that. You know, running media at regionals for a few years. One time I can remember Adrian, who was head rep at maybe Canada West, barking at a cameraman and then at me because the cameraman was like in the view of the competitors or something. And that's kind of when I really got a sense of how serious everybody was about doing an amazing job here. So, I mean, that was a great experience for me to have, even though, you know, my feelings were hurt at the time. It only lasted for 2 or 3 minutes and then I shaped up.
And so, I think because you were bought into the mission, you would understand instantly if Adrian came off the floor and when you did have a transition, because Chris, your guy was standing in the lane right on top of a barbell. He didn't know that, but I did. And I had to get him the heck out of there. And you go, well, yeah, obviously, you got to stand on a barbell. Of course we get out of there. In the moment, all you hear is, get him out of there, you're an idiot. But, you know, sorry, usually not you're an idiot. You're an idiot is usually not attached to it. But we got to move right now. We got to do things fast and right, and you're standing in the wrong place. So that happens sometimes.
Oh, yeah, and that's exactly what happened. You know, we talked about it after, but it's really interesting to hear. Like, if you start with the right people, it's a lot easier to kind of get the message. And even though there is conflict, that's a necessary part of growth. You know, Justin, a lot of people are going to hear this and they're going to be really excited to hear from the man kind of behind the curtain here. Can you give us any kind of glimpse as to what's to come with the CrossFit Games in the future, or just like a vision of where CrossFit Games is in 5 years?
You know, I think if you were to ask Dave, I think we'd probably have similar answers. We obviously think about this a lot and we think about where we're going. But if we're real honest with ourselves, we didn't create this. We've been curators of this thing. And so we have tried to create opportunities and then be reactive and to continue to kind of steer it. We set some kind of loose boundaries on where we don't want it to go, but I think we try to remain open-minded about where it can go. There were periods of time where I think we were doing too much and it wasn't of a high enough standard when we did 33 sectionals and all those regionals. And so we had to prune it back. We had to have a worldwide system where all the workouts during the CrossFit Games were programmed by CrossFit, not by sectional directors and things like that. So there was a period that we went through where we constricted our schedule. I don't think that we're continue to constrict. I think we'll expand. I think there will be more opportunities for participation in the future. I think a lot of those opportunities will be outside the United States. I think some of that will be soon, and I think it will be, you know, we'll be very intentional and methodic about how we roll this stuff out. We've never been a real like, hey, here's the 5-year plan, and look, we're just checking things off the list to get us from now to then. So there are a lot of plans that happen behind the scenes, but as a nascent organization, you know, we're real young. In the CrossFit Games in 11 years, you know, it seems like there's a lot behind us. There is a ton in front. And so I think we try to keep as many options on the table for as long as possible, so that we don't kind of steer ourselves into a corner and then feel like we got to back up to get out of it. So there's a lot. So I think that we will go into a period of time where, you know, we will expand more. We'll create more competition opportunities outside the United States. We've got a really fast growing affiliate population in South America and in Europe and, you know, Asia, China and stuff is really growing quickly. I think that we, you know, we take notice of that. Anything that we can do to support affiliate owners around the world is of a very high importance to us. You know, we really take note of that. So I think that's it. And I think to continue to use our media to positively impact affiliates, you know, one of the things I'm most excited about, which isn't necessarily around competition, but it's around the media that we're producing. So, you know, for the first time we were on broadcast television this year. You know, we had been on ESPN a lot. ESPN's still a cable channel. You can't get it for free. ESPN touches about 80 some million homes. CBS is touched by about 119 million homes. So it's more people. For the first time, we had distribution outside the United States that was larger than our distribution inside the United States. So more people had access to watch the CrossFit Games on televisions outside the US in places like, you know, France, Italy, Germany, all of Latin America, Australia, than they did inside. And so we're just scratching the surface there. And one of the important components of that is for every single hour of programming that goes on around the world, there's also always going to be a CrossFit commercial. And that commercial is not going to be about sign up for the Open. It's not going to be about tune into the next broadcast. It's always going to be about, do you have to be fit to start CrossFit? How do you begin this journey? You know, we produce some commercials about, does CrossFit make women bulky? Like tackling these objections to like, oh, you know, I think only the fit people do CrossFit. You and I, we know that not to be true. Affiliates around the world know that not to be true. And so use those precious moments in the middle of this, you know, entertaining television show to tell people that this is an approachable pursuit. It's not just a sport, it's a lifestyle. There's gyms near you, wherever you are in the world now. We've got over 14,000 gyms where you can do this, and maybe not what they're doing, but you can get on the same kind of slope that they're on. You might have to start way further back. And I think that's really the future of what we're doing is use sport as part of a system. Let it be just an entertainment property that flitters in and it's like, hey, you know, you watch the Super Bowl, that doesn't change your behavior. You're entertained, and you're like, great, that's the event of the weekend. You turn off the tube and you go back to your day life. When you watch the CrossFit Games on television, I hope that people say it's easier for me to work out, eat, and join communities that are going to support this behavior long, that it plants a little seed that can be unpacked when you walk through the doors of an affiliate, that it helps our definition of fitness spread further, faster than it ordinarily would, that we're educating people, even people that don't do CrossFit. So I think we've got a far higher purpose for our media, and I hope that we can continue to build upon that. And I think that what we've done, and Seminar SAP is beautiful for this. You know, now you go to a level one course, and it's the same stuff that I used to teach. I haven't been on seminar staff for 3 years since my son was born, but I miss it dearly because the language is so clear and it's so sticky and it is so easy to understand and apply. You know, I want to take a kernel of that and put it into our media so that when people watch cab drivers, you know, grandparents, you know, people that are just sports fan, armchair quarterbacks, they watch that and they feel like they know a little bit about fitness and they just know where they can go if they want to take the first step. And I think that that's the flagship that the CrossFit Games can be, is to support the affiliate community, drive people through the doors, and then let affiliates change their lives, you know, as local points of distribution, and, you know, the community is going to make the big impact. So we're just trying to steer them that direction.
That's awesome, man. You know, Justin, I think we're going to leave it there. That was such an amazing summary of the purpose and intent of the CrossFit Games that the other questions that I have are not going to take us deeper than that. So I really appreciate it. Thank you for hanging out with us today, and I'm sure people are going to get a lot out of this.
Great. My pleasure. Anytime.
This episode is brought to you by the Two Brain UK Summit, November 11th and 12th at Reebok CrossFit Thames in London, England. We are taking our famous summit on the road to Europe this fall, and we hope to see you there. November 11th and 12th, Reebok CrossFit Thames, the largest box in the UK. We're going to be there. Jason Williams is going to be there. Some other Two Brain mentors will join me. We'll have some coaches there. We'll have some special guests. You can sign up on our site, twobrainbusiness.com/summit.